JB lay back on his bed. There was a lot to consider here. Who was Xander, and what did he want from him? With his failing memory, what could he tell Xander that he hadn't already divulged? What had they done with his weapons? The canvas bag. Carrying it came back as the briefest flash of memory, something he knew that Grant hadn't told him. Would they give him his clothes back? And what would Xander do if he couldn't remember? Or if he did, and it wasn't what Xander wanted to hear? And most importantly, JB wondered who the hell he was. That would be a start. After a short interval, he was brought some food by a person who also checked his wounds. The young woman was less than 5 feet, with long dark hair knotted into a ponytail. She had delicate hands and a slim figure. Her hands felt good to him as they wandered over his body, checking the bruises and changing the few remaining dressings on deeper cuts. She was accompanied in the room by the heavy-set sec man, who was holding his AK-47 at port arms, ready to step in if the armorer offered him any trouble. When she was finished, they left the room, the sec man shooting JB a pitying glance as he closed the door behind them. Left alone, JB eased himself out from under the sheet, reaching down for the tray the woman had left on the floor. The stew was basic, a broth of some indeterminate meat with a few vegetables thrown in. It looked as though it had been simmering for days to soften the coarse-fibered meat. It tasted salty, with just a hint of something hot to try to hide the lack of flavor. The stew was almost inedible, but it was the first solid meal he had eaten in days, so he devoured it quickly, before taking great gulps of water to counteract the salt. When he had finished, he didn't feel better for it. He sat back on the bed and closed his eyes. Gradually, his stomach eased. JB began to concentrate on the rest of his body, on those parts of him still hurting the most. His left elbow was weak, his right shin was sore, and still had some kind of cut or bite on it which needed dressing. His spine was a little stiff, and his head still felt like someone had taken a hammer to it. He could feel that it was still swollen and sore, with contusions around the back of his skull. Adding things up, it didn't look too good at the moment. He couldn't remember who he was or how he had got here. Xander, the Baron, wanted answers from him that he probably couldn't give, and wouldn't be pleased with that fact. The future looked pretty bleak. So he waited, huddled under his blankets, for whatever might happen next. The door to the cell was thrown back, and Grant limped in, carrying a bundle of clothes that he threw at JB. The armorer recognized that they were his old clothes. They had been washed. There was a battered fedora with them, and that struck a chord.
Get dressed, quickly.
What about the rest of it? Where's my bag?
Please don't think we're stupid. That won't help matters.
JB dressed, then sat back on the bed and waited for the next move. Feeling in the breast pocket of his shirt, he found a pair of wire-rimmed spectacles. He put them on, and his vision was suddenly sharper. Outside JB's cell, through a spy hole in the door, Xander watched the armorer as he sat back. The Baron frowned.
Could it really be him?
You know the stories better than I do, but it sounds like everything you ever told me.
Xander chewed his lip.
Open it.
Xander strode into the room, his imposing physique seeming to take up much of the light and space in the room. He was a big man, just over 6 feet, and stockily built, although now running to fat. He had wiry reddish-brown hair streaked with gray, and a beard to match. His clothes were of the finest silk and satin. Altogether, he was an imposing presence in such a place. JB sat on the bed, unmoving, not even staring. Xander could see right away that it would take a lot to intimidate this man. Grant had followed Xander into the room and was standing as respectfully far back as the lack of space would allow.
I'm Xander, Baron of this ville.
I kind of figured that.
Perceptive? This ville is called Duma. It was started by my father, who found a small ville already here, took advantage of his contacts to make it something bigger. richer. He was a trader, and he wanted to settle in one place. He made this the main rest spot for convoys around here, and a good place to do some trading while they were getting drunk and screwing gaudy sluts. I've tried to keep up my father's good work.
Well, that's great for you, but what does that mean to me?
Sander examined him closely.
It could mean the difference between you staying here and having a good life, or being a problem that we have to deal with accordingly. Grant here tells me that you got very little knowledge of how you came to be at the bottom of one of my wells. More importantly, he tells me that what you went through has knocked your memory out. So you have no idea who you are. Grant figures that you're telling the truth. He's quite good at spotting bullshit.
Well, that's good to know. Wouldn't want you to think I was lying.
Well, I tell you, my friend, I think I know who you might be. Many years ago, when he was alive, my father used to tell me stories of a man they called simply Trader. He was the best, the smartest, hardest, and fastest, and the best nose for Jack and all the game. He was the number one man until he disappeared. And they used to tell stories about two of the men he rode with. The one-eyed man with the heart of steel, who used to ride shotgun. His name was Ryan Cawdor.
There wasn't even a flicker of recognition from J.B.
And Cawdor had someone who they say traveled with him. A guy with glasses and a battered old hat, like we found on you. This guy was an expert on weapons. No one knew blasters like him. They say it was his life, that he was obsessed and that he had a gift for it. He could figure out what blasters people used just by the sound. He could strip and rebuild blindfolded, maybe even with one hand behind his back. And he always carried a lot of shit around with him, not unlike yourself.
J.B. felt uneasy, but his impassive face let nothing show. Behind the mask, however, something was stirring. The way in which he'd reeled off a list of weapons earlier, without even thinking about it.
I can't tell you that man's name. It was Dix. John Barrymore Dix. Called himself J.B.
The Baron paused, waiting for that to sink in. J.B. looked at him and shook his head.
You figure this Dix guy is me, right? And maybe I am. I mean, I know a lot about hardware, and the glasses and hat thing fits. But that ain't a whole lot to go on. I don't know shit about Dix. I don't know shit about anything before I woke up in this room.
Xander glanced behind him toward Grant. J.B. saw the gaunt, gray-haired man nod, almost imperceptibly. Xander turned back to J.B.
I think you could be. So does Grant. And we also figure that you're being straight when you say you don't know. So what I'm gonna do is give you a little test. Follow me.
The Baron turned and left the cell. Grant motioned for J.B. to follow, and the armorer rose from his bed. He followed Xander into the corridor with Grant in tow. Once beyond the door to his cell, J.B. could see that there were two SecMen accompanying the Baron, one of whom he recognized as the SecMan on watch. The other had to be the Baron's personal bodyguard. They walked along the corridor of the secure block. There seemed to be 8 rooms in the block, all leading off the one corridor, which terminated to the rear in a solid wall. J.B. glanced back over his shoulder to check and was ushered on by Grant, but not before confirming his suspicions. Even though he had been brought in unconscious and given medical treatment, they hadn't wanted to risk his escaping. It was a windowless hellhole, and made J.B. wonder why Xander found such a block necessary. He had the feeling he would have to tread very carefully. The SecMan in front of Xander led them out. Dusk was falling, and there was a glow of ambient light starting to come from the surrounding ville. The blocks he could see were similar to the one he had just left, apart from the fact that they had windows. Duma looked dull and functional, and although the air was cool, it wasn't sweet. smoke from fires, the smell of smelting and of old chemicals being mixed with natural oils and herbs, the stink of hot, sweaty people fueled on brew, jolt, and sex, it all seemed to hit J.B. simultaneously. Beyond his cell's soundproofed borders, the hum seemed to close in on him. J.B. slowed, trying to take it in. A sharp push from Grant reminded him to move quickly. Xander strode ahead, flanked by both sec men, leaving Grant in sole charge of J.B. They either felt that he was no threat or that Grant could handle him. To tell the truth, J.B. was too sore to fight. And anyway, where could he go? He followed dutifully, trying to take in as much of the villa as possible. So far, it seemed to be thriving. Xander had already turned into another building, this one guarded by two more sec men, dressed similarly despite their wildly differing builds. Both shouldered AK-47s, and from some distant part of his mind, J.B. found himself wondering how Xander had managed to gather so many of those blasters in one vill.
Move.
J.B. moved, following Xander into the building. It was larger than the secure block, and had windows that were protected by iron and steel bars driven into metal and concrete frames. This building was a bleached-out brownish-red, and was two stories high. J.B. looked up at the ceiling. It was lit by artificial light once again, and not by oil lamp or naked flame. Whatever else, Xander had to have found himself a good source of fuel to power generators. Inside, the building was divided into rooms leading off the main hall, which was open to a staircase leading to the upper story. Two sec men patrolled along the mezzanine, with another one seated on a wooden chair in the hall. He sprang to his feet when Xander entered. Unlike most of the sec men J.B. had seen so far, who were either Caucasian or black, this one looked Hispanic.
Esquivel, where's Bud?
Sir, he's just out back, sir.
Damn it, why isn't that old bastard here when I want him?
Because it don't matter who you are. When nature calls, you gotta answer. You want me to shit on your lovely, clean floors?
Bud was a grizzled old man, with a halo of black and gray hair surrounding a tanned pate that bled down to a leathery, weather-beaten face. He was skinny and still pulling his belt tight as he entered the hallway from the rear of the building.
You old bastard, always trying to wind me up.
What do you mean, trying? Anyway, I'm here now.
Bud stopped short when he saw J.B. He examined him with a quizzical eye.
Oh, this is him, is it?
Could be. Let's see what he's got.
J.B. was angered by the way they talked about him as though he were a pack horse, or not even there, but he kept it to himself. There was nothing he could do at this stage except keep calm and see what they expected of him. Bud beckoned to the armorer.
This way.
Casting a glance at Xander, Grant, and their accompanying sec men, J.B. followed the old man as he opened double doors. J.B. stood speechless before the main armory of the vill. There were crates of AK-47s as well as racks of SMGs, mostly Uzi and Heckler & Kochs, and a variety of automatic and semi-automatic pistols, old revolvers that were both Colt and Smith & Wesson of 20th or even 19th century vintage. There were crates of ammo for all of them, and there were even quantities of less common weapons, such as Thompson SMGs. J.B. could recall learning somewhere that these had an early 20th century vogue, and Derringer pistols of an earlier vintage. J.B. walked around, checking the condition of each and rooting through the ammo.
What else you got?
He'd figured it out. If he was J.B. Dix, then he would know all the armory. And to his surprise, he did. Seeing the weapons triggered memories and familiar feelings, and he found that he knew about everything he saw. Bud led J.B. into an adjoining room. While Xander and Grant watched, J.B. checked the heavier anti-personnel and anti-tank rocket launchers, mortars, and bazookas that Xander's armorer had amassed. There was enough ordnance here to knock out a vill twice the size of Duma. Bud led J.B. up to the second story. Up there were supplies of Plastex, old gelignite kept in stabilizing conditions, and grens of all kinds, shrapnel, concussion, and gas. Afterwards, JB and Bud walked back down to the hall, where Xander and Grant were waiting.
I'll tell you something, Baron. If he isn't the man your father spoke of, then sure as hell has spent a long time learning how to copy him. The looks fit, and he told me a couple of things about some of these blasters that even I didn't know.
So you are J.B. Dix.
Yes, I must be, if you all reckon. Still can't remember much about what happened to me before a few days back, but then again, I didn't know I remembered that much about ordnance until I was faced with it. So, I guess I'll say, yeah, I am.
Okay, but if you are J.B. Dix, you and Ryan Carter, the one-eyed man, were virtually joined at the hip. When you left Traitor, you were both together. He'd be as much of an asset to me as you are.
JB wasn't sure he liked the sound of that, but he knew he was in no position to call the shots.
Look, I don't know when I last saw this Ryan Carter. In fact, I don't remember him at all right now. I may have been with him when this happened, or I may not have seen him for years. Hell, he could have bought the farm for all I know. It's not my problem, is it?
Xander eyed him, trying to work out if he was holding back.
Listen, I'll cut you a deal. I want Duma to be the biggest vill in these lands. I get the best convoys through here, and we have good things. We make a lot of jack. That's good for me, and it's good for everyone else here. The happier everyone is, the easier it is to be Baron. But to keep that steady, I need the best sec force and the best armory. Bud is good, but he's getting old, and this place is big. It takes more than one to run it. I want you to take it over from him. Run it with him until he chills. Then run it yourself with your own hand-picked underlings. It's good, Jack, but you do it right, or you'll be hung out to dry.
It was an offer JB couldn't turn down. He knew he wasn't likely to fuck up and bring down Xander's wrath on himself, but he still had an underlying feeling that he'd like to have seen more of Duma before blindly accepting. All he knew was the secure block, the armory, and what Grant and Xander had told him. How much of that was true? But then again, what other choice did he have?
Okay, I'll take it.
The companions had no idea who had been able to gain entry to the redoubt or where they had come from. They'd allowed themselves to be run like rats in a maze, pushed into this corner where they had nothing to do except come out fighting or curl up and wait to be killed. The barricade they had built for themselves in the redoubt office was flimsy. It wouldn't last long against any kind of concerted attack. Or maybe, just maybe, whoever had run them to ground here wanted to keep them alive. Why pin them in if not as a prelude to an offer of surrender? Without JB, the companions had little in the way of spare ammo, apart from what they carried with them, and no Class X or Grens of their own to augment their weapons. They would have to blast their way out, rather than prepare the way by using explosives. They could sit and wait, but how long would that give them? They had few supplies, and they couldn't afford to rest. Tactics were simple. They had to do the unexpected. Instead of sitting there and waiting for the end, they had to come out firing. To the right of the door, the enemy group would be back up against the closed sector. The companions hadn't heard it open, so it made that group a sitting target with nowhere to run. To the left, the enemy would be able to flee up the corridor and around the dogleg bend. This made the group on the right the more dangerous, as they were backed into a corner. The only thing to do was break cover during a lapse in the containing fire laid down by the enemy. Ryan opted for his Sig Sauer. When they were primed, Ryan and Jack waited for a shot from the doorway, then counted to five together. Their eyes met, and they launched themselves from behind the barricade. It took 6 or 7 seconds to reach the door from the barricade, enough time for another shot to be loosed from the doorway. Ryan felt the slug burn as it ripped through his jacket and shirt, but all that mattered now was driving the enemy back. Ryan and Jack ignored the assault and attained the doorway. It was too narrow for both to jump through at once, but Jack was there first. He propelled himself through. He saw one man's startled face as his powerful Colt Python ripped a hole in the man's chest cavity. As Jack took the airspace, Ryan opted for the floor. throwing himself across the concrete. Ignoring the jarring pain in his shoulder as he hit, he remained focused and carefully picked his targets. There were four men and one woman, all with rifles. They'd been sent to snipe and contain. They weren't close-quarters fighters. Two of them stood open-mouthed, momentarily frozen in shock by the sudden appearance of the two companions. Two of them had already begun to turn tail and run. But the woman raised her rifle, pulling back the bolt on the ancient weapon, ready to drill another hole in Ryan. Ryan sighted her with the Sig Sauer, aiming high to get her chest or face. A neat red hole was drilled in the center of her forehead. Ryan skidded into the far wall of the corridor. The impact on his already damaged shoulder temporarily numbed his fingers, causing the Sig Sauer to slip, leaving him momentarily defenseless. Mildred and Christy were already out in the corridor. Mildred snapped off shots from her checkmate ZKR and took down two runners, catching one in the lower back and the other in the right thigh. Meanwhile, Christy let loose with a Smith & Wesson, picking off two startled marksmen who were slowly starting to react. One was driven off his feet by a short-range shot that hit him in the chest, while the other found his groin and lower abdomen pierced by .38 caliber shells. Doc had been physically frail since the rockfalls in the tunnels had caused him respiratory problems, and the subsequent search for JB had given him little time to recover. But Doc had something in his favor. The physical and psychological traumas he had experienced could only have been borne by someone who had vast reserves of inner steel. Pushing his limbs, even though they ached, the old man crossed the floor in seconds and stepped out into the corridor, wheeling around to face the sector and bracing himself as he did so. There was a matter of yards between himself and the four people gathered by the barrier. One of them had been hit by Jackshot and was collapsing into a heap of blood and flesh to the floor. The other three were stunned. Then one of them, a woman dressed in rags, whirled to tap a code into the sector. Doc leveled the Lama. The three enemy marksmen were cut down.